Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Everything coming across as feeder cattle are non-breeding animals, so they have to be either castrated males or spayed heifers.
Dr. Darrell Pill, Oklahoma State University livestock economist.
And, you know, that may be one of the things, again, there's undoubtedly a backlog now of cattle that we're going to cross that now have not been able to for the last few weeks. And so if any of those are spayed heifers that are up against their six-month clock on when they have to get across, those will probably be the first ones that go. And you know, we may see more of those try to go to those western ports, even though it's a little out of the way for them. But if they're up against their timeline, we may see some of those heifers move over towards those western ports to try to get them across before the clock expires on them.
This is Agriculture Today.
U.S. is imposing new tariffs on imports from 14 countries beginning August 1st. According to CNBC, President Donald Trump shared letters sent to leaders of countries like Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, and Thailand. Tariff rates range from 25% to 40% on imports depending on the country. Now, the new duties apply to a broad range of goods, but don't specifically mention agriculture. Still, global trade changes could influence ag input cost and export competition. A previous July 3rd deadline was delayed to August 1st by executive order. Additional announcements are expected soon. U.S. has reopened cattle imports from Mexico, starting with the port of Douglas, Arizona. Imports were halted in May after a new world screwworm outbreak in Mexico. USDA says the phased reopening follows weeks of surveillance and verification that Mexico's control efforts are working. Every animal will be inspected and treated. Other border points could reopen later this summer if no new cases appear. Approximately 1.15 million head of Mexican cattle cross into the U.S. annually, playing a significant role in the country's beef supply. U.S. corn exports trending higher, but this time without China leading the way. Recent USDA data shows South Korea, Spain, Japan, Vietnam, and Colombia are now driving export growth. Combined, they purchased more than 350 million additional bushels compared to last year. Now, Mexico led the gains in 2023 and 2024, but for 2024-2025, other countries stepping up their efforts, China's purchases remain lower. According to Agricultural Economic Insights, the growth is promising, but it's still too soon to know how durable the new markets will be. EPA's latest biofuel blending proposal could significantly increase demand for U.S. soybean oil. The rule would increase bio-based diesel requirements by 67% between 2025 and 2026 and reduce credits for imports favoring domestic feedstocks such as soy. Now, if adopted, the proposal could drive more use of soy oil in biodiesel and renewable diesel. American Soybean Association says it's a strong signal for U.S. producers. Now, a final decision from EPA is expected later this year. And southern timber prices remain under pressure in the first quarter of this year, with average stumpage prices flat or slightly lower for most significant products. The timber slowdown is closely tied to a soft housing market. Over 70% of softwood lumber goes to single-family construction and remodeling, both of which are cooling. April housing starts for single-family homes fell to an annualized rate of 927,000 units, down 12% from the previous year, and the lowest rate since mid-2024. Permits, a key forward indicator, also declined by more than 5%. But looking ahead, housing starts expected to remain soft through year end. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, I think anybody looking at cattle markets in the first half of the year would just have to be pretty amazed at the run we've had.
Dr. Darrell Peel is an Oklahoma State University livestock economist on the first half of 2025.
After climbing for the last couple of years, feeder and fed cattle, you know, feeder cattle prices were up about 18% through the course of the first half of the year. Fed cattle prices were more like 20%. And, you know, boxed beef values went up even more than that from the early year low. So it was a phenomenal first half of the year, I think, from that standpoint. And, you know, we did see some changes in the first half of the year in terms of beef production. We started the year, the first quarter of the year, beef production was very similar to last year, with fed beef production staying pretty steady on a year-over-year basis. We just hadn't seen the drop last year that we expected to see. But in the second quarter, that began to change. And so fed slaughter and fed beef production began to drop. Of course, non-fed beef, the cull cow stuff, has been down for the last 2 years, continues to be down. So all of that added up to, you know, a notable decrease in beef production in the second quarter of the year. And that's part of what set up such strong beef markets as we ended the first half of the year.
So that's the first half of 2025. What about the second half?
Well, I think there's a couple things to keep in mind as we go forward. One is, I don't think I would expect to see the same kind of run in cattle prices in the second half of the year that we had in the first half of the year. We did see kind of a slowdown in mid to late June a bit in cattle markets. Both feeder and fed cattle markets showed a little bit of pullback, and that's not too surprising at all. I don't think it's a major change in the sea winds here. You know, I think the cattle markets will, you know, fed cattle markets may move kind of sideways here through the heat of the summer. Feeder cattle markets, it's hard to say. They could back off a little bit, although, you know, their seasonal trend is higher. So, you know, I suspect that they will continue to be, you know, more sideways. What I think we're looking at here is a slower rate of increase in cattle prices in the second half of the year, more than likely, at least given where we are at the moment. Now, the other thing, of course, is we still don't really know where we're at with any heifer retention or herd rebuilding. So that could change things a little bit as we go forward. But, you know, the market still looks strong. I think probably just at a somewhat slower pace here in the second half of the year. I do think beef production will continue to fall in the second half of the year.
But again, we're dealing with one of the smallest herds ever. Will we start seeing heifer retention now?
Yeah, you know, we keep getting indications sort of anecdotally from producers, from lenders, that they're getting a lot of inquiries about that. We do know that, you know, pasture and range conditions and forage production generally has improved significantly in the southern half of the country, basically. The northern plains, some parts of it have been seeing some additional drought relief, but there are some other areas that are still pretty severe. So, you know, that'll be a bit of a limiting factor. But all in all, you know, I think it's happening. We don't really have the data to confirm it yet. And I think it's happening probably at a relatively slow pace. We're hoping that by late July, we're going to get a cattle on feed report, which will have a July breakdown of steers and heifers on feed. And we'll be watching that carefully to see if the heifers on feed continues to fall as it did in the April report. And then the July mid-year cattle inventory report will give us some numbers on cattle inventories, including beef replacement heifers in the middle of the year. The problem is going to be, it's going to be a little hard to interpret because we don't have last year's report to compare to. So we're not going to know precisely what it means, but it will give us some indications. We'll be looking for that data pretty carefully.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
As we saw in President Trump's first term, substantial non-inflationary growth was created. Non-inflationary growth. Real wages rose, and working Americans did better.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent on the One Big Beautiful Bill.
Hourly workers did better than supervisory workers. We believe that this will happen again. As you outlined, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, tax breaks for seniors on Social Security, and the ability to deduct auto loans on new cars made in America, as was available when I bought my first car in 1978, will be restored. All of this will help working Americans overcome this horrendous affordability crisis that this administration inherited.
Now, the one big, beautiful bill did pass, and it's been signed into law. Roger McCohen, tax law specialist, Washburn University.
The primary beneficiaries of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act were the lower to middle income taxpayers. And so if nothing happens, they get the biggest hit because they got the biggest benefit when TCJA was enacted. And in my most recent blog article on this, I worked the returns for three different types of taxpayers. One was a single mom with three children under age 17, so she's going to claim child tax credits for those. And that's something that would get cut in half if Congress doesn't pass this bill. So she's got three kids that would qualify for the child tax credit, and I put her at $50,000 in taxable income for this year and next year with head of household filing status, which would be the best filing status for her. And under current law this year, her tax liability is zero. If Congress doesn't pass this law, next year her tax liability is zero, but she loses $2,440 in refundable child tax credit. So that's $203 a month that she doesn't have next year that she would have if Congress passes this bill. I also did a return. I mocked up a return for a family of four, including two children under age 17 that would qualify for child tax credits. I gave them taxable income of $85,000 for 2025 and 2026. So pretty typical Kansas family here. Mom, dad, couple of kids, couple of young kids, taxable income $85,000. This year, married filing joint, their tax liability federal is $2,232. If Congress does nothing next year, that goes to $5,292.50. That's an additional $3,060 of tax, or $255 a month that they'd have to come up with. And so that percentage increase in their tax liability is 137%. That is huge. Then I ran up the income scale for a third scenario. I worked a tax return, just mocked up a tax return for a married couple with at $350,000 of adjusted gross income for this year and next year, no qualified children. So this would be the couple that's in their 50s. Let's say they both have well-established careers. The kids are out of the home, can't claim child tax credits, so they don't have any qualified children. They have $40,000 in itemized deductions, so they like 4-H, they like K-State, so they get the charitable deductions. And that includes state and local taxes of $12,000. Now, I came up with their tax liability this year of $61,012. Next year, if Congress does nothing, that would go to $75,121. So that's an extra almost $1,200 a month in tax. Their percentage increase in tax liability is 23.1%. So, yeah, they pay more in dollars. Their percentage increase is less than the family that's making less, who's really going to have to struggle to come up with an extra $255 a month just to meet their federal tax obligation.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We're doing so good. We have hundreds of billions of dollars flowing in from other countries. We have plants being built all over.
Speaking at a rally in Iowa on July 3rd, President Donald Trump talking about tariffs, revenue from tariffs, and gains in trade deals important for ag.
I mean, a little less here because you have enough with your farm. Oh, by the way, but I did get beef and I got ethanol into Europe. You saw that. You saw that. United Kingdom, they didn't want to do it. You know, they never took our beef and they never took our ethanol, and we said, got to do it, and they did, and they were great. We made a wonderful trade deal with them, but we're doing that all over. Is ethanol very important still for Iowa? Is it so? Yes? Anyway, so they've taken it in the United Kingdom, and beef, they never took it because they want to do their own. You know, they have a lot of farms and a lot of farmers, and they want to do their own, but they took it, and it's going to be great. You're going to do, I'll tell you what, the farmers here are going to do incredibly. Plus, we have tariffs on a lot of this stuff that was coming in and absolutely killing you, where they have different forms of vegetation coming in at prices that were very, very bad for you. And a lot of it comes in because they want to put you out of business, and then they want to raise the prices. And we're not letting that happen to the farmers and to Iowa, to Nebraska and Wisconsin and all these other places that have been so good. And in breaking news just yesterday, we reached a historic trade agreement with Vietnam to open their markets to American exports with zero tariffs. They get zero tariffs. And you're going to be giving them vast amounts of farm product, including beef, pork, poultry, dairy, and pure Iowa ethanol. You're going to be given all of those all of those products. And the fact is, I could go on and on, but the fact is really strong, and it's stronger than it's ever been and stronger than I've ever seen. The golden age of America is upon us. This is a golden age. This is such a beautiful term, the golden age. And I couldn't have even said it in my first term. I'm telling you, this is going to blow the first term away, and we did great. We got great marks in the first term, and this is going to blow it away.
That's on the export front, but on the domestic front, he says they're ending the EV mandates.
We're bringing back freedom and liberty, law and order, and above all, we're bringing back common sense, right? Common sense. On day one, I stopped the weaponization of government against people of faith, and we created the Department of Justice Task Force combating anti-Christian bias. And I have to tell you, Pam Bondi is doing a great job. Pam Bondi is doing a great job. Attorney General. I ended the Green New Scam and terminated the insane. This is insane. The electric vehicle mandate where everybody had to have a car that happened to be all electric in the next few short years. The mandate. Some people want to have gasoline powered. Some people want to have hybrids. Maybe even someday hydrogen. Right now, I don't like it because when they blow up, they don't ever find the body. They find the body about five blocks away. That does not sound promising to me. They said, no, it's getting better. I said, that's okay. Let somebody else use it. But we're not going to have all electric. We're going to have electric if people want it. Electric is great. Gasoline, people like better in many cases. But you can have whatever you want. But it's ridiculous to mandate that everybody's going to be driving an electric car in 5 years from now. So I ended it.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So, you know, the border's been completely closed since early May as the USDA is trying to get in sync with the Mexican authorities on controlling and or at least containing and then beginning to control screwworm that had gotten into kind of the main body of Mexico.
Oklahoma State University livestock economist Dr. Daryl Peel on reopening the U.S. border to Mexican feeders.
U.S. and Mexican authorities have worked hard the last few weeks to improve the process of trying to contain and control screwworm to keep it from encroaching even closer to the U.S. border. And satisfied with that progress, USDA has announced that they will begin a phased reopening of the border ports. Now, they're going to start on the western side of Mexico with the port in Arizona, Douglas, and then move eastward there through the New Mexico ports and eventually to the Texas ports. And that makes sense. The greatest threat is in the Texas ports, the South Texas. If you think about the way Texas dips down to the southern tip, that gets farther and closer to the area where the threat would be. So, we're going to begin a phased reopening. I think the dates they published are right after July 4th for Douglas, Arizona. And then from there on, Columbus, New Mexico, Santa Teresa, New Mexico. And, you know, the Douglas port doesn't cross that many beef cattle. And they said it would be limited only to Chihuahua and Sonora cattle. But I wouldn't expect very many Chihuahua cattle. Chihuahua is a big beef cattle state for exportation. But, that's going way west. That's kind of going away from where their markets are. So I really don't expect to see a lot of cattle. And I think that's intentional on the part of USDA to kind of start with the low volume report ports. And there'll be some backlogs or there'll be some bottlenecks at the border with this process. Once you get into the New Mexico ports at Columbus and especially Santa Teresa, that's the biggest port on the border. We'll get into more potential for cattle to come up. But even there, I think the process will be fairly slow. There will continue to be some, undoubtedly some bottlenecks with just the physical process of getting cattle across the border. So all of that to say that we are going to begin some phase reopening, but the volume of cattle coming in from Mexico will be quite slow for, certainly several more weeks to a few months. Maybe by the end of the year, we're getting back close to normal. But all of that to say that it's going to continue to restrict the number of cattle coming in as we go forward. You know, it's a process. It takes time. It's a very complicated process, and it's a very long border. So there's a lot of things that have to take place to take care of all that.
But how important are these feeders to the overall beef industry? Zach Tindall, Vice President, Producers Livestock.
Well, as far as cattle supply, feeder cattle supply for feed yards, it's pretty important right now when you look at the U.S. and some of the tightest cattle supplies we've ever seen, and feeder cattle availability at an all-time low. So I think last year, even with the border being shut for just over a month, I think we imported like 1.2 million head or somewhere right around there into the U.S. out of Mexico. So obviously we get a lot of feeder cattle from that, and I mean, at the end of the day, that translates into pounds and slaughter and everything else. So we're seeing it a lot in cattle on feed reports, mainly in Texas. The cattle on feed numbers are down sharply compared to where they were a year ago, and that's just because they've lost part of their supply and of the feeder cattle. You look at the feeder cattle, fat cattle spread, I mean, you crush that, and it's way out of whack right now. Well, most of that is these southern yards having to go somewhere else to find those cattle that typically came from Mexico. So it is a very important part of the flow and the price of feeder cattle. Now we open one area here this week and supposed to open three or four more over the coming weeks, but you're not going to get back the cattle that should have been shipped. I mean, you can't make up the lost time on that. So just because we're opening the border doesn't mean they're all going to come through at once and make up for everything that we've missed here over the last 3 or 4 months.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Our topic is really to get into the discussion about a sweep tub versus a bud box.
Oklahoma State Extension beef breeding specialist, Dr. Mark Johnson.
Most all working facilities are going to have the chute itself where we actually have a head catch, potentially a means to squeeze, but that's where we're going to contain animals. We're going to administer vaccinations, do preg checks, whatever the case may be. The animals are actually going to be in the squeeze chute. Leading up to that, we're going to have an alleyway. There's a lot of different alleyways that can be built or that are on the market. Some of those have got vertical sides that adjust in and out. Some are a little narrower at the bottom, a little wider at top to prevent that temptation of animals trying to turn around. And how you want to set up your alleyway is really in the eye of the beholder and works relative to how many cattle you've got to work and the size of those cattle. Well, we typically think if we've got something that's adjustable, if we can make it a little narrower at the bottom, say around 16 to 18 inches, maybe about 28 inches tall up at the top, that's going to accommodate most normal size cattle. Where we get into that thing that we need to decide on if we're building a new facility or improving upon what we got really gets into how we're going to bring the cattle into that actual alleyway and eventually lead them to that chute. The historical way, the age-old way, is some sort of a sweep tub. Where I'm standing today is actually in the sweep tub itself. And if we imagine that we were running cattle up through this alleyway between the camera and I and into this area right behind me, that alleyway sets back behind me and to my right, we've got the sweep gate. And it's basically a mechanical means. You've got some backstop to it here as it would go around a curved sheet metal tub itself that prevents it from being pushed back by cattle, and it gives us a mechanical means to actually crowd cattle into the alleyway itself. There's probably going to be some backstops set up in the alleyway to keep those cattle from backing out. So this is the old traditional sweep. What do we like about a sweep? Well, we never actually have to get inside with the cattle in order to use the sweep gate. We're behind it. We've got the stop mechanism in place. We can crowd the cattle in. It works pretty well. The other way that we can go about this that potentially requires a little more training and a little more thought with regard to just cattle behavior and their normal instincts is to set up a bud box. If we could imagine something setting at about a right angle to the alleyway, approximately 12 foot wide, 20 foot long, we are going to use a bud flow box to capitalize on cattle's instincts to actually escape us and get away. A bud box has got the advantage of being able to be set up on a temporary basis. We can use some portable panels to actually set up a bud box. And so it creates the opportunity to try it, see if it works for us, see if we like it. The thing about a bud box, you need to be in the box with the cattle. So one of the decisions is that on the comfort level you've got and actually being in the box with the cattle in order to get them to go where they want. There are some hybridizations of these that we find on the market anymore. Something that is set up to capitalize on the bud box and cattle's normal instincts that can keep the operator on the outside of a bud flow tub, if you will, for lack of a better term. where walking by creates that path and their instinct to escape and go back. So you will find some things that kind of are somewhere in the middle of the traditional sweep tub versus a bud box.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Maybe the most important guy in this whole place.
Speaking at a recent rally in Iowa, President Donald Trump.
A lot of projects to stop using environmental stuff. A lot of projects to stop. They use it as a weapon. The radical left and others, they use it as a weapon. This man is the greatest. He's doing a job that's incredible. Doug would tell you that. Everybody will tell you that. Lee Zeldin. He's the head of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. He's the head of it. Great guy. He was a great politician, a tremendous congressman. He ran for governor of New York, which is tough. And he almost won. I'm glad he didn't win, actually. I wouldn't have you right now. And I said, Lee, a nuclear power plant, we give you 1 week to get me the approval. So, but he's been done great.